On this episode of the Practical Guidance Podcast Labor and Employment Series, we hear from attorney Evandro Gigante. Evandro is a partner within the Labor and Employment Group at Proskauer. He is the co-head of the Employment Litigation and Arbitration Group and the Hiring and Terminations Group. He represents clients on a variety of labor and employment matters, including allegations of sexual harassment, race, gender, national origin, disability, and religious discrimination. I spoke with Evandro recently about the Dobbs decision and its impact on employment law issues on a state and federal level. For the listeners out there interested in this topic and related issues, you should visit Practical Guidance and check out some of the articles. You'll find some links in the podcast notes to this episode. I'm your host, Kevin Hilton. I'm an attorney with LexisNexis. To learn more about LexisNexis's practical guidance research solutions, visit lexis.com. Lexis's practical guidance gives you insights to support what you do. So, Evandro, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me for the Practical Guidance podcast. If you could just start by telling me a little bit about your practice at Proskauer.
Sure. So I'm in the Labor and Employment Department at Proskauer, where I'm a partner focusing on all things employment related. So that includes employment litigation, certainly defending clients in federal, state courts and agencies involving claims of discrimination and harassment, as well as counseling and clients on litigation avoidance. So things like ensuring proper performance management, mitigating risk, obviously helping to resolve claims before they ever get to the courthouse steps, kind of sums up my practice at Proskauer.
We're going to talk a little bit today about the Dobbs case, which I know has been very much in the news, and it brings up many employment-related issues for corporations who work across multiple states. So I wondered if you could give me some context as to how you're advising corporate clients in light of this decision.
Sure. So I'd say that, from an employment perspective, I've been looking at it mainly through the lens of employers looking to navigate the Dobbs decision and avoid the risk of claims of discrimination or other mistreatment by employees based on whatever policies or procedures the company is planning to put into place. So part of that, of course, entails, whether and how an employer can put into place policies that provide certain benefits for employees looking to have an abortion, but are unable to do so in the state in which they live and work. And likewise, whether providing those benefits, either one, could create some risk of a potential discrimination claim, or two, just in terms of the employer's communication of its position and stance on abortion, or employees doing the same, could create risk within the workplace involving claims of, again, discrimination or harassment arising out of things such as pregnancy, religion, or all the other protected categories that touch upon, this particular topic.
That makes sense, because as I'm, just thinking through some of the many areas where landmines that are out there, I mean, social media has that come up as a topic of what the corporations need to be doing in order to manage it? Both, I guess, there's internal social and that many have, and then also external.
Yes, it has. I mean, so obviously with social media being as prevalent as it is, it's really a platform and a vehicle for employers and employees alike to say what they want about social issues, about workplace issues, and broader issues that affect, affect the world. And so when it comes to social media, employers tend to think about, having in place policies that put guardrails around what employees can and can't say over social media, and likewise rules around, anti-harassment and anti-discrimination through social media, just as those rules apply, in the conference room or in the cafeteria or in any other part of the workplace. And you know, the challenge has been for employers on this topic is sort of navigating things that employees may say or do over social media that could have an impact on the workplace, whether that be making statements for or against the Dobbs decision, whether those statements align or don't align with what the company's own public stance has been on the issue. And then, you know, sort of navigating the potential for claims of discrimination or other unfair treatment if it were the case that an employer would, you know, speak to an employee about the things that they posted or said or liked or shared on social media, up to and including potentially disciplining someone for saying something that could be viewed as, you know, controversial, discriminatory, outside of the bounds, right, of what the employer would expect of its employees. And when those things start to touch on things like religion, right, which is obviously, a protected category from an employment perspective, you know, employers have to think carefully about whether they or how they would approach those issues with an employee so as not to create even the appearance of, you know, taking issue with someone because of their religion, right, as opposed to because of some comments or remarks they made that may have been offensive or inappropriate or otherwise not in line with, you know, what you would expect of an employee. I think you start from the premise that, you know, the First Amendment and rights to free speech, you know, aren't rules that necessarily exist in the private sector workplace, right, as opposed to perhaps a public sector workplace or
right. Or
government regulated speech. So there, you know, an employer does have more latitude. But by the same token, you know, employees have a right to, at least under the National Labor Relations Act, you know, communicate with their colleagues about, you know, the terms and conditions of their employment, engage in other concerted activity for their own mutual aid or protection. And so employers, you know, have to tread lightly when taking action with respect to someone's speech that could be viewed as protected speech under the NLRA. And likewise, employees have a right under Title VII and all sorts of other anti-discrimination laws to speak out against discrimination and or participate in government investigations or internal investigations involving alleged discrimination. So, you know, those anti-retaliation protections also protect to a certain extent speech that could be viewed as opposing discriminatory behavior. So, you know, what it means is that employers just have to think carefully through those issues, make sure that, you know, the speech isn't protected in nature, ensure that whatever actions are being taken are not based on, you know, protected activity or, you know, speech that is protected. And likewise, keep in mind that there are also rules in certain states involving lawful outside activities. New York is an example that, you know, protects employees for engaging in lawful recreational activities that could certainly include, you know, posting on social media and the like. And so, you know, I think employers, particularly ones that operate in different jurisdictions, have to make sure that they're aware of all of the different laws that apply to their employees and to their workplaces to make sure that they're not, you know, creating risk of potential claims.
Yeah, I mean, it seems incredibly complicated because if you are operating across state lines and within multiple states where, I mean, you have Texas, you have Oklahoma, you have places where they've outright criminalized abortion and then there are all these trigger laws and then there's potential liabilities for aiding and abetting or questions of aiding and abetting. I mean, once you get into there's the how the company wants to position itself. I'm hearing from you also then the rights that the employees may potentially have in advocating for a fair workplace and for their own benefits. And I understand some of this NLRA Section 7 stuff you're talking about here. Are you finding that a lot of the companies are now kind of just stepping up and saying, what do we need to do? How do we go about reevaluating all of our policies on this? Or what? Where are they at this point?
Well, what I'd say is I think companies are starting to think through what their position is going to be on these things, meaning, you know, are they going to offer benefits for employees to travel out of state? What is that going to look like in a way that, you know, complies, of course, with, you know, the company's legal obligations, including those arising under ERISA, but at the same time, from a communications perspective, making sure that they're mindful of the types of things that, you know, employees are going to be reading about their company in the press, and make sure that they are, you know, providing, I would say, or advocating, you know, a balanced approach. In other words, recognizing that there are different views here, and that employees and, you know, people can differ on this issue, of course. And so, you know, you want to be careful not to also create, you know, an environment where someone feels like they are, you know, sort of being treated differently or somehow looked down upon because of their religious views, their social views, their societal views, or any other views that could be impacted by the Dobbs decision. And then once an employer kind of has committed to, you know, a game plan in terms of how it wants to approach the issue, whether or not it wants to provide some benefits, whether or not it wants to provide some statements, you know, I see those companies kind of thinking that through carefully to make sure that they're not, you know, stepping on any landmines or creating any unnecessary risk for the organization, you know, vis-a-vis their own employees.
It's such a hot button issue right now. You know, as a company's interest in retaining employees at this point and acquiring employees, it's, I know, a time when it's been hard to find people. It could be a big concern also right now, because your political stance on this could definitely impact who's going to be willing to work for you or who's going to continue to work for you.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think that you just have to add this to the list of challenges that employers have had to deal with over the last couple of years, you know, which are, you know, it's getting to be a pretty long list.
Right.
But, you know, you add this to that list, including, for example, an employer's position on, you know, remote work. And is that something you want to offer to employees? And is it something that you, you know, want to make as part of your package to recruit and retain, you know, top talent? You know, you couple that with the fact that remote work could mean that employees end up working in lots of different states around the country, which could give you, in a lot of ways, a competitive, you know, advantage vis-a-vis recruiting and talent pool, but at the same time, in this context, right, could give you, you know, more compliance, right, and sort of navigating more state laws that in some cases, you know, you mentioned the trigger laws and other laws that would purport to limit an employer's ability to provide those benefits. You have to consider whether those laws are in fact actually preempted by ERISA and whether they are laws that, you know, are preempted or not, depending on what type of law they are, versus laws in some other states which, you know, fully protect an employee or anyone's right to get an abortion and protect an employer's ability to provide benefits to, you know, support that. So, you know, you're really dealing with, you know, laws on both ends of the spectrum and, you know, everything in between when you, you know, find yourself to be a, you know, a multi-jurisdictional employer.
Do you mind just elaborating on, you were talking about ERISA protections, just for anyone out there who doesn't know what you're talking about?
Sure. I mean, so, you know, the ERISA, you know, is a law that obviously governs, you know, an employer's ability to and regulates the manner in which an employer provides, you know, benefits to its employees. And in respect of state laws, the general rule is that, you know, ERISA preempts state laws which relate to employee benefit plans. And it has often been the case that if states were to enact laws that touch on or relate to employee benefits, the first question an employer and an ERISA lawyer would ask is, well, okay, is that statute actually preempted by ERISA? There are some exceptions to ERISA preemption. For example, state health insurance laws that include certain health insurance mandates at the state level, or criminal laws of general applicability. So in navigating the different laws that exist throughout the country on different, you know, topics, including abortion and whether, you know, aiding and abetting an abortion, you know, is a criminal act under certain of these statutes or a civil act under certain of these statutes. You know, that analysis will tell us whether a particular state law, or give us some idea whether a particular state law is or is not preempted by ERISA. And so, you know, if you're going to be an employer in multiple jurisdictions, you need to make sure that you understand the laws in which your employees sit, because those are the laws of the jurisdictions that are going to apply, and then make sure that you have a handle on whether, you know, those states have laws that prohibit an employer from providing these types of benefits, or at least purport to, and then whether that law is otherwise, or whether we can take the position as an employer that law is otherwise preempted by ERISA versus sitting in a state where, you know, the law doesn't just prohibit, but protects an employer's ability to provide those types of benefits. So it's really a patchwork of, you know, state and local laws that employers need to make sure that they comply with.
Those examples of Texas or Oklahoma could become rather sticky in terms of ERISA as to whether or not it is applicable in protection, because if it is a criminalized behavior or activity, then I'm guessing ERISA is not going to give any protection.
That's correct.
That's correct. The thought. Is there any guidance you're giving with companies who are like engaging within some of these states, which are actually criminalizing?
Yeah, I think I'd say for the most part, you know, employers are taking the decision, you know, making the decision either to provide the benefit across jurisdictions or not. As you've seen, lots of large companies have already done so, and done so very publicly, notwithstanding, you know, state laws that on their face may direct otherwise. And I think, you know, I can't say sort of necessarily what's going on within the walls of those companies, but I'd say it sort of looks as though they're sort of taking that risk and you know, assuming it, right, for purposes of the broader policy they're looking to implement. So I think that's probably the way that, you know, those companies are looking at it, whereas I think others might not be, and, you know, are not willing to necessarily take on that risk, but might do other things, you know, that don't necessarily run afoul of those laws on their face, making positive statements or giving people assurances, you know, that the company is supportive, but stopping short of, you know, actually providing employees with a benefit, right? Those are a few of the options that employers are considering. From a, you know, from a liability perspective, you also need to be thinking as an employer about, you know, obligations that you may have under different state laws to employees who are pregnant, and the need to provide accommodation to those employees under those state laws, whether that includes or doesn't include some type of leave of absence or time off for reproductive care. A host of laws in the last couple of years were passed at the state level that actually explicitly protect employees based on reproductive health decision-making. You know, New York is one such law. California has such a law that's under consideration, and same with respect to Illinois. And so, again, those are the types of laws that you need to be looking at and tracking from a state to state by state perspective to ensure that you're, you know, complying with those requirements and providing whatever legal protections are necessary. And not sometimes that doesn't just include the duty not to discriminate, but it could also, in certain circumstances, depending on the states, include some type of duty to accommodate employees on the basis of pregnancy, which depending on the law could include, of course, you know, pregnancy related conditions or employees who decide, you know, to receive, you know, some reproductive care or have an abortion.
You mentioned, reference some cases out that are out there. I know there was this EEOC claim against Dick's Sporting Goods for providing funding if an employee or a spouse needs to leave the state for an abortion. That was a claim that was brought against them. So That's I guess an example of one of the civil kind of cases. Have there been any to date yet that you have heard of that are going more in the criminal direction and trying to bring some liability against a company for essentially like an aiding or abetting?
I have not heard about sort of criminal prosecutions as of late.
What are some things employers need to consider in terms of privacy and potential discrimination claims in light of Dobbs?
It's going to be up to an employer to, you know, sort of manage the track, manage the patchwork of state laws that protect employees based on, you know, their reproductive health decision making. So in New York, there was a law that was passed not too long ago that bans employment discrimination based on employees' reproductive health decisions. And, you know, that would ostensibly protect an employee who had, you know, had an abortion or made other decisions with respect to their health, their reproductive health. And if that's the case, then under that law, an employer is not permitted to discriminate against an individual on that basis. You know, as we know, the Dobbs decision didn't prohibit abortion in the United States, right? It gave to states the rights to decide for themselves how they would legislate around this issue. And so what we're finding, not surprisingly, is that there are states that are, you know, legislating towards prohibiting or, you know, severely restricting the right of an employee or anyone to get an abortion. And, you know, then there are laws that prohibit the aiding and abetting of that procedure, you know, that may or may not be preempted depending on the issues we discussed. On the other end of the spectrum, there are states like California, and I mentioned New York and California and Illinois, the last two of which are considering laws that would prohibit discrimination against employees based on reproductive health decisions. Those laws would, you know, seem to be a reaction to what, you know, the legislatures in those jurisdictions anticipated, and certainly now what they have seen by way of the Dobbs decision and, you know, the state's efforts to create a more, you know, welcoming environment, let's say, to individuals who had an abortion or plan to or are having an abortion, by according to them, not just the right to have it, but also the right not to be discriminated against by their employer for having it. And so I think that's where, you know, you're going to see states fall on the spectrum of protection here. And as it is, I mean, there are, you know, federal protections in place for pregnancy discrimination. Most states would typically have a very similar protection for pregnancy discrimination. And so, you know, those laws could also be interpreted in a way to, you know, prohibit discrimination, certainly on the basis of abortion. And so that could seemingly also provide some level of protection for employees, even at the federal level.
Evandro, thank you so much for your time and all the insight you've provided today. To learn more about Evandro's practice at Proskauer, visit the firm's website at proskauer.com. And remember to visit Lexis's Practical Guidance Research Solution to see some of the valuable articles on this topic. As a note, if you're enjoying these podcasts, please subscribe to the monthly labor and employment series you are listening to right now. Lexis is also offering a monthly practice-specific data privacy and cybersecurity series. And finally, we're continuing with our monthly rotating practice area podcast series as well. All of these Practical Guidance podcasts can be found through your favorite podcast provider. And remember, no matter your practice area, if you need practical guidance on how to proceed in your work, check out Lexis's Practical Guidance Research Solution, available now through Lexis. For more information, visit lexis.com. Thanks, and be well.